You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation. You're listening to Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Thank you for subscribing on Apple and Google Podcasts, Spotify, or in Himalaya. My name is David Ramil. The Miami Heat will be taking on the Indiana Pacers at least twice while they are in Orlando, and so Caitlin Cooper, a phenomenal writer for Indy Cornrows, the Pacers site on SB Nation, is joining the show to help us preview the matchup. Caitlin, first and foremost, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. Phenomenal. Now I'm just like set up to let all these poor listeners down.
Well, if they're not following you, first of all, I'd be very surprised, because I think everybody who follows basketball pretty closely has been monitoring your work over the I can't say exactly when it was that you sort of burst onto the scene, but you've been a must read ever since I remember first checking out one of your pieces on Indy Cornrows. And again, this is a Pacers site, so it's not like I'm gravitating towards Pacers coverage, but you've been a phenomenal find there. And so, yeah, I stand by my words. Phenomenal.
Well, good. I mean, I would welcome having Heat followers follow me. This is the first thing I've done with anybody from Miami, so.
Oh, really?
First time for everything, yeah. First invitation from a Heat beat reporter.
Okay, so I've got a standard to set here as well. Well, it's interesting because obviously there's some history between the two teams. Just hours before everyone hears this episode, Jimmy Butler actually just jumped on a Zoom call with media and said paradoxically that facing the Pacers would be just another game, but then he also noted, as he's wearing a mask, as everybody in the Orlando bubble is, that he was glad that we couldn't see the smile on his face. We'll start off there, Caitlin. What are your thoughts on facing Jimmy twice in a two-week span in early August?
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. I think these, by the end of it, they could end up seeing each other like up to 9 times in about 3 weeks. But yeah, I mean, Jimmy, I'm here for the petty. Bring the petty. But TJ Warren, it's kind of interesting with that matchup because a lot of people in Pacer Nation are pretty interested to see Jimmy and TJ go at it again after the dust up in the last game. But I mean, if Victor plays and Victor looks anything like Victor, I would imagine that Jimmy Butler is not going to be guarding TJ Warren anymore. So might lose some of the juice depending upon how things play out between now and then with Victor's decision.
Were you surprised to see Warren get into it with Butler that way? What's your Pacers type, you know, perspective on the whole fight and everything else? It seemed kind of like blown up a little bit. I know it got a little semi-heated, and especially for NBA basketball, but what was your overall feeling on the fight, if you want to call it that?
Well, I mean, on the surface, it was kind of the only thing that made that game interesting from a Pacers perspective. I mean, it was pretty out of hand fairly early, but I actually did a short interview with Victor during the quarantine period where I talked to him about he was doing a promotional charitable thing with Cholula Hot Sauce. And I asked him, I said, you know, rank your teammates from mildest to spiciest. And he was like, oh, this is a great question or whatever. But he was like, I would definitely have TJ Warren as the mildest. Like, he just doesn't say anything. We call him silent killer, like all this stuff. And when TJ Warren does interviews with media members, like, he doesn't usually, he's a man of pretty few words. So to see him get that heated, I mean, was definitely kind of seemed out of the blue. But then I went back and looked from the first game that they played with each other, and the two of them were kind of getting out at each other during the fourth quarter of that game too. So I think there might have been a little bit of beef history before it boiled over in the second matchup.
Yeah, I couldn't remember anything from Jimmy's days in Philadelphia or Minnesota or anywhere. I mean, and obviously Warren, he wasn't much of an impact player in Phoenix, although maybe that's just because most people were ignoring the Suns. But have you been surprised at Warren's role in Indiana? I mean, I know a lot of that has to do with injuries creating more opportunities for him, but he's been a real nice, pleasant surprise there, I would imagine, especially on defense, because that was, I think, a part of his game that was mostly overlooked coming, again, from the Suns.
Right, sure. I mean, I remember the very first – well, there was some instances of this in preseason too, but the very first game of the season, his first defensive possession, he like totally basically set a friendly fire screen on his own teammate trying to fight over the screen. I remember thinking in real time, like, oh, dear, like how is this going to go? And within like a week or two time, like you could just see that he was fighting over picks. He had better sense for where he needed to be, and I think the Pacers have a pretty good reputation of ironing out and refining defensive skills when players come over, especially if they have a desire to do so. And I know from TJ's perspective, he wanted to shed that reputation that he had with Phoenix, that he was a one-dimensional scorer. And, you know, midway through the season, even he's had some game-saving plays on defense at the end of games. I mean, he blocked Tobias Harris whenever against Philly, and that ended up being a key play that let the Pacers win. So watching his development on that end of the floor, there's definitely a before and after that you can see since he came over with the Pacers. Or, I mean, even since the beginning of the season with the Pacers, it's been fairly dramatic.
How has it been trying to keep track of this team? And you know, obviously you've been dealing with numerous injuries, not just Oladipo, but Malcolm Brogdon's been out in and out of the lineup. And so now Jeremy Lamb is lost for the season as well. Is it hard to kind of gauge? I think I saw a tweet from you where you think this team is still going to be dangerous in Orlando, regardless of who's in the lineup. Why do you feel so strongly that they're going to be a dangerous team in Orlando?
Well, actually, my tweet might have been a little bit deceptive. Like, the piece was more about, like, just from me, from an X's and O's perspective, there's things that I think that the team can reveal about themselves in the seeding games, regardless of whether Victor plays. I would have some doubts about their ability to get out of the first round, definitely without Victor. And even if he is there, I think they'll face a bit of an uphill climb because, their starting lineup projected with Victor in it hasn't even played 100 minutes this year. I mean, Malcolm Brogdon, as you say, the two of them have been so in and out of the lineup. I just don't think there's even been any opportunity to build any sort of continuity or defining of roles there in terms of, you know, primary ball handler, secondary ball handler, how they're going to get both of them involved at the same time. And then, I mean, like now, I don't even think Malcolm Brogdon has practiced yet since having tested positive for coronavirus. I think he's still not been a full participant. So, you know, if Victor ultimately decides, hey, you know what, I still don't think I'm ready to play, then you're bouncing Aaron Holiday up into that spot. And that group has only played around 90 minutes together as well. So, I mean, I think it's a pretty tall ask to expect them to make a lot of noise in the playoffs. I mean, somewhat pending matchups, but if Nate McMillan manages to do that and they can make it tough and get out of a first round, then I think that would be a pretty significant accomplishment, unless Victor looks significantly better than he did over the 13 games that he's played thus far.
And just to kind of keep my listeners in the loop, this is in reference to a tweet from The Athletic's Shams Charania, who mentioned that Victor Oladipo has been participating in 5-on-5 workouts, and there's some optimism as to whether or not he'll actually be playing in Orlando. He had previously stated that he would not do so. Now maybe changing course. I wanted to save that for the next segment because there's so much to get into when it comes to Oladipo. But, you know, as far as matchups are concerned, you kind of hinted at before. I saw a piece, I can't recall exactly where now, but something that said along the lines that if there was going to be a playoff matchup, that Miami would be the ideal one for Indiana. I guess a lot of that depends on who's available, Oladipo included. But why would you say that Miami would be the best matchup, or do you disagree with that take?
I would actually disagree with it. Like, maybe, I mean, your listeners, I'm probably going to endear myself to them because I actually think that the Heat are positioned pretty well pending, you know, I know that they have some players who are outstanding who haven't come to Orlando yet either. I think it would actually be somewhat of a tough match. I mean, especially with Victor, because I think on one end of the floor, if he looks like himself, he's most likely going to be getting checked by Jimmy, which, you know, not a, the easiest matchup in the world defensively. I mean, just looking at TJ Warren, I looked at this right before I hopped on, and in the two games that TJ's been defended by Jimmy, he's 2 of 8 from the field and has shot 25%. So at one end, he's having to be defended by Butler, and then at the other one, the Pacers haven't really had a great answer for Bam on the roll. Like, just having Miles Turner having to check that, especially against like an empty corner option. Bam's so explosive with his first step that Miles struggled with that just a little bit. So Victor's biggest strength defensively is his ability to tag rollers and be able to get back out to shooters, but that's a much taller task if he's having to do that against Duncan Robinson. I mean, I think there's a pretty strong case that Duncan Robinson's been maybe the best shooter in the NBA this year. So, and you know, the Heat just load up on easy points. They're number one in free throw rate. They're great at transition efficiency. They're number one in three-point percentage, and the Pacers are a team that mostly hang out in between the three-point line and the paint, and they barely ever get to the line. So just, like, a lot of that doesn't add up to exactly favorable matchup. And then The Pacers haven't been great against zone either, which the Heat haven't run a possession of zone, curiously enough, against the Pacers, but they struggle to think through what they're going to do against a 2-3 zone. And I think that would be even more the case with the way the Heat set theirs up without going into extra detail. But
Sounds interesting. I did not know that about the zone. So hopefully we can talk about that a little bit later on the show. We'll take a break here as Caitlin Cooper of SB Nation will help us figure out the latest with future Heat legend Victor Oladipo in the next segment. You're listening to Locked On Heat. Reminder to listen, subscribe, and leave a review whenever possible on your favorite app to listen to podcasts, and that you always get the latest episode by asking your smart device to play Locked On Heat when you get in your car to get your team every day. Victor Oladipo, that's obviously there's been a lot of focus on Oladipo and his future and everything else. We have to get through the next month or two in Orlando first and foremost, but obviously, there's some questions about Oladipo and whether or not he'll sign with Miami, whether or not he'll sign with Indiana. What's your feeling on everything that's happened with Victor over the last few weeks? I think people are kind of looking for information here. He sends out a tweet or we get a report on something. I've talked to somebody in the Pacers organization that has some concerns about Oladipo joining Miami. What's your feeling on the situation there with Victor? Is it tentative? Is it being overblown somewhat, you think?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, honestly, my mind is spinning from all of this. The chain of communication over the last month or so has been very odd. Like, well, starting back clear, the Indy Star had a report about that there was one player who was considering, was still on the fence about whether he was going to play in the restart or not. That was Justin Holiday. It was not Victor. And that was a team source that told the Indianapolis Star that, which seems to indicate that they weren't super aware that Victor was on the fence about whether he was going to play. Within about a week, Adrian Wojnarowski at ESPN has a direct quote in an article from Victor saying, you know, I'm not sure. I'm going to be cautious with this. I'm going to ramp up my activity and evaluate where I am. Like, that's, you know, Victor telling that directly. Like, that's not on background. And then they do Zoom calls before they head down to Orlando, and Victor still sounds, you know, a little bit like, I just have to be really careful. I'm at risk of a soft tissue injury. And Nate McMillan literally says, our expectation is that he's going to come down with us to Orlando. He's going to play 5-on-5. And then if he doesn't feel right, we'll pull him from there. And then literally 2 days later, Shams Charania has another direct quote from Victor in The Athletic where he's then pulled himself and said, I'm not going to do this. It's a risk. And I have to put my health first, which I totally understand. Like, I get that perspective, but it was pretty evident that after an hour later, when there's a statement released by the team, that the team wasn't exactly aware that he was planning to pull himself at the juncture when he did, when they were planning to take him to Orlando. And now he went with the team to Orlando and he's going through practices, and supposedly there's, you know, quote unquote, growing optimism. And now there's another report out today that if he doesn't play, he'd be at risk of losing $3 million in income, because the league doesn't want to set a precedent with players who are healthy not playing and still getting paid. So then there's kind of a question of, you know, is there a monitor, like what caused him in a week's time to flip-flop from I'm already pulling myself to now I'm considering that I might go ahead and play in this restart? Because, I mean, he really wasn't willing. He was going to go to Orlando, but he wasn't willing to test it out anymore and see. He was already, you know, saying this is a done deal, I'm not going to play. So if, whether it's a financial incentive that he doesn't want to lose that money, so he's going to go play, or is he like succumbing to some outside pressure? I mean, it's been very loud and noisy in Indianapolis with criticism of how all of this has been handled, whether, you know, it's just the discourse around it. I mean, I don't personally, not that he needs my approval, but I have no problem if he sits out because of an injury risk. I mean, we don't even really know what all of this is going to be, but, as far as the connections to the Heat, that you
let's take a step back there. I'm glad you brought it up. Do you want him to play? Maybe that's an overly simplistic question, but I mean, given everything regarding injury and everything else, I mean, there's a lot to weigh in there. You want the team to succeed. You want them to do well, and obviously, they're more dangerous with a fully healthy Oladipo. But do you want to see him out there on the floor?
Right. I mean, I think it would definitely be better from the team's perspective if they had more information on where he is in his progress, being able to see him, especially if they, you know, want, if if he has interest in coming back to sign an extension at the start of next season. And I think it would be helpful to know how he fits with Turner and Sabonis so that they can evaluate that pairing and see if maybe there's a change they need to make there or if they need to pivot. To have the full picture in front of them this summer, I think would be helpful headed into the final year of his contract. But I mean, I certainly wouldn't want him to sustain some injury when their chemistry is just so underbaked right now. Like going into this, I just have a hard time getting fully behind them being able to mess around and you know, get out to the Eastern Conference Finals or to be able to beat the Milwaukee Bucks in a series. Like, I don't think they match up with the Bucks that well in a sense anyways, but just with all the circumstances that have gone on, I don't see that's too likely. And I think that my preference would be that he's healthy and comes back next year and can hopefully lead a team that's better and more prepared to be successful in the postseason. But I mean, it has to be his decision.
That's an interesting perspective, because I think from everything, again, you know, you tend to be isolated in a bubble even when you cover a team. As much as I'd like to think I have a nuanced perspective about other teams and players around the league, you tend to kind of overlook that obviously somebody like you who covers the team knows a lot more about those details. I don't think anybody has ever mentioned the fact that we're kind of just thinking that Oladipo wants out, that he wants to join Miami for whatever reason. But there is the very realistic possibility that maybe he just isn't fit onto that roster, and then you have to undergo a pivot, as you said, if you want to. Is DeMontis Sabonis kind of viewed as the future of the team more than Oladipo at this point, or is that just your unique perspective?
No. I think I should have expressed myself a little bit
no,
better.
No, that's fine. I'm just curious, because I think there is there might be a fit situation there. Obviously, you want to continue to build chemistry leading up to the playoffs this year, but in the future, I mean, there might be some concerns about whether or not that's the best version of this team moving forward.
Right. I mean, I think it would definitely depend on if Victor looks like himself or not. I mean, if he does, I would think that he would be the Pacers' number one priority, because when he's healthy, he is their best player. My point about maybe pivoting was that if he and Brogdon are out there and the Turner Sabonis pairing isn't functioning at a high level, then maybe once you have all that information from seeing it in a playoff scenario, you'd be willing to move on from one of the two of your centers to flip into, you know, maybe a more suitable stretch for a wing or some other piece that would make all the rest of the existing parts go together better. Like, I definitely think they would prioritize Victor Oladipo if he looks anything like himself.
Okay. How has that pairing been, in your opinion, of Turner and Sabonis? I know it was kind of clunky earlier on in the season, and then it seemed to work itself out. What's been the change as far as that duo is concerned? And I know from, again, Heat fans' perspective, there was kind of a sort of quasi-rivalry, as it was, especially leading up to the All-Star selection. It seemed like we were debating whether or not it was Sabonis or Adebayo as an All-Star this season. Of course, both of them made the team. But what's your feeling about that pairing with Miles Turner and then how Sabonis has played this season?
Right. So I would say, as far as the pairing goes, that they're probably – they looked as good as they've looked headed into the hiatus. They're starting to do a little bit more experimenting with cross-matching defensive matchups, where instead of – like Miles would guard a Porzingis or a Giannis, even at the risk of displacing his rim protection, because he would be better guarding out on the perimeter. And they had some success with that. They started running a couple plays that would get both of them moving in equal opposite direction at the same time, where they'd be a little bit more involved here or there. I'd still like to see him do that a little bit more. And then, but still, against the top six teams in the East, if you look at their net rating just against those, I mean, it's pretty solidly in the red. So I definitely need to see it, like I said, in a first round playoff series and see, because like if the Milwaukee Bucks are the cream of the crop, which I think we all would probably say that they're the favorites to get out of the East, I don't think that the Pacers having that pairing sets them up very well to be competitive with the Bucks, because the Bucks are so good at taking away the rim that hasn't been the best matchup for Sabonis. And then Miles has a hard time getting a matchup against Brook Lopez to drag him into space when Sabonis is on the floor. So you're never really getting the ideal pairings of what you need to do to be successful against the Bucks team, to be able to hit threes at a high volume, whether that's Turner being matched up with Brook, or whether that's getting a stretch four so that, you know, if you post Sabonis, you can be running split cuts and getting more threes with somebody who's going to shoot at higher volume from a wider variety of spots, or be able to create his own shot from a three, hit a step back three, hit deeper threes. I think that's ultimately what they would need to do. I think that they can be a good team with Turner and Sabonis out there, but I think that your ceiling is probably a little bit lower. But I would have questions about, you know, what is the replacement for either one of them? And does that make your floor a little bit lower if you don't have both of them as your full-time center rotation? I mean, I'll be interested to see how it plays out in a, whether they're playing the Heat or the Sixers. I mean, you look at the Heat, I would assume that Eric Spoelstra would probably be willing to start Myers Leonard and Bam against them, even though Sabonis has had pretty good success against Myers Leonard. But I know that the Heat can pretty easily pivot to going small. And then how would the Pacers handle that? Because they can go small with more combinations than what the Pacers would be able to if they needed to pivot in the same way.
All right, let's save that conversation about individual matchups for the next segment. You're listening to Locked On Heat. Just a reminder that you can always reach me online at Locked On Heat or use the hashtag AskLOHeat to get in touch with me about anything regarding the Heat's season starting up in Orlando. We're here with Caitlin Cooper of Indy Cornrows, and we were talking about some individual matchups. And you mentioned that Sabonis has fared well against Myers Leonard. And I was watching parts of the December matchup, the late December game between the two that wound up being a one-point lead. A one-point win, rather, for Miami, a very close game there. And Sabonis started off pretty badly. I thought most of that was when he was covered by Leonard. Or was that did I miss something in that?
Right. No, it was more the second game when he had success kind of just powering through him. The first game was probably one of Sabonis's, if not his worst games, game. Yeah. He just didn't have a great game that night. But, yeah, I mean, a lot of this – I hate to put it this way. I think this is what I'm doing with all my pieces, but so much of it could change in an instant with Victor, because not even just with, you know, the Jimmy, TJ Warren shifting, but, you know, if they're starting Aaron, I could see the Heat wanting to set, you know, a lot of guard-to-guard screens with Jimmy for Kendrick Nunn, and then Jimmy kind of bullying that matchup against Aaron Holiday. If Victor's not there, it's going to be a lot harder for the Pacers to downsize with like-sized defenders, because they also don't have Jeremy Lamb. Like, this is a piece that a lot of people are forgetting, that, you know, the Pacers went 32-20 in games without Victor this year, but they had Jeremy as a stand-in temporary replacement there. And now you're going to be bumping Aaron up into the starting lineup, who has experience starting, but you're giving up size there. And the Heat, while there's, I think that the Heat lacks some duality in terms of having shooters who can also defend and, or defenders who can also shoot. They just have more combinations, I think, that they could get to with Bam at center that could make things hard on the Pacers if they're having to stay big more than they normally would without Victor.
Well, let's plan on Oladipo playing, because I think that seems like that's much more likely now, especially when you bring up, and rightly so, the financial issue. He doesn't want to lose out on that payment, and that's a pretty big concern for a lot of players. That's probably why they're in the restarting the situation in the first place. So assuming that Oladipo is in the starting lineup, how do you see things kind of shifting as far as that potential matchup, at least during the regular season and maybe even in the playoffs?
Right. I think it would be a big matchup for TJ Warren, as much as Jimmy likes to call him trash, because TJ would be guarded by Duncan Robinson then at that point. I think that's a matchup that you'd really need to look to exploit.
Duncan's not such a bad defender. Right. He seems like he gets targeted a lot, but I don't think he's as bad as everybody.
Well, he has length. That helps him. And like I said, I find it really interesting. I even asked Victor this question when I had him on the phone, and he didn't have anything to offer for me. But I find it very interesting that the Heat did not pivot to zone in either one of these two games. I don't really get why, because 2-3 is going to force the Pacers to be a higher three-point volume team, which they don't shoot threes on high volume. Right. I think they're like 30th in the NBA at that. And the Heat like to use their wings and kind of angle them to make it harder to get passes to the corners out of that zone, which the Pacers' primary play that they like to run against that is to take Doug McDermott and run him off a stagger and overload the other side. So that's going to be a little bit harder to do against the way that the Heat set that up. And the Pacers love to run pick and roll with Sabonis and have him operate out of the short roll. And that's also a lot harder to do against the zone. So I feel like that's like a little wrinkle that they have sitting there that I'm going to be really interested to see in the two seeding games here, how they handle, and will they show that to the Pacers and give them opportunity to potentially get reps against it? Or is that something they're going to hold back in the event that this is, you know, a first round playoff matchup?
So is there an X factor in terms of matchups or anything else that we might not have considered that you think stands out that might be benefit Indiana or could strongly favor Miami, either one?
I mean, I think it would definitely help the Pacers if the Heat stay bigger more. And if the Heat, I mean, I think, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Miami's mostly built to sink or swim from three-point range. So if they have some bad shooting nights and the Pacers can kind of junk things up at the defensive end, especially, like I said, it will help them if Victor's out there and he can tag on Adebayo on a lot of the actions that they're running in these last several games where he got loose or made plays out of the short roll or whatever it was. If they can junk things up defensively, that's where they're going to have to win, because I just don't see the Pacers being able to outscore them in a series and win at that end of the floor. Like, not with the shot profile that the Heat have.
Right. So we were talking before about Miami not necessarily being the best matchup against Indiana. Is there an Eastern Conference opponent that you think Indiana would fare better against?
Yeah, you know, the Sixers, they pull me in and then, like, they make me believe in them and it makes me very angry at times. Like, I'm going to be interested to see how they fare now with Ben Simmons at the four and with Shake Milton in the lineup. I mean, the one thing that the Pacers have struggled quite a bit against Joel Embiid. Miles Turner has a tendency to get into foul trouble pretty early there.
Sure.
And then, you know, you're having to put Sabonis on him, who's pretty important to be quarterbacking the offense at the other end. But just from a shot profile standpoint, I think it's a little bit easier to shrink the floor against the Sixers. They don't necessarily have the lightning quick point guard that Malcolm Brogdon kind of struggles to defend, even though obviously Ben Simmons is incredibly dynamic. But I don't think you're going to be getting into a firefight from three that the Pacers aren't necessarily used to be playing. And the Pacers have also experimented with some zone themselves that I think would help them be able to guard and beat in that matchup. And overall, like, this isn't a very scientific thing to say, but I just kind of don't trust the Sixers not to get in their own way. Yeah. To an extent. And I do wonder what happens to them when they're on a neutral floor. Maybe nothing, but I mean, I did witness them on New Year's Eve come into the Bankers Life Fieldhouse, and it was just inexplicable the difference in their energy when they were on the road versus when they're at home. So I can't believe I'm saying it, because a year ago I wouldn't have said, but I almost like how the Pacers match up with the Sixers better than I do with the Heat.
Oh, that's interesting. I mean, there's a lot.
I mean, the Sixers have more top tier. Like, I would say that sure, they're more talented, but I like the overall picture of, or I guess I should say I don't, of the matchup and the shot profile and what the Heat have to offer. And they're obviously very well coached. I would trust Eric Spoelstra to make adjustments in a series where I have some questions in that area with Brett Brown and just overall that, like I said, the Sixers just haven't been able to get out of their own way with their spacing, though I do think it will help them to bring out Horford off the bench.
Yeah. There's a lot of consideration regarding what the team's goals are during these eight seeding games. I think for Miami, they've been pretty consistent. At least Eric Spoelstra has been pretty consistent that they're going to try and win these. Do you get a sense from Nate or any other players in that team that maybe not necessarily tank games or throw games, but not necessarily trying to win as many because they've already got the fifth seed, so it's theirs to lose? I mean, are they going to try and push for the fourth seed or try to get home, you know, no home court advantage? It doesn't really matter there. What's the overall goal for the Pacers during those eight seeding games? Or is it just to build camaraderie and chemistry, though, as you hinted at before?
Yeah, I mean, I think the main point is I know that they've talked about that they're going to be willing to play a little bit deeper rotation and that they don't want to push minutes, that they want to make sure that they keep players healthy and be able to enter the playoffs with their full roster. So it doesn't really sound like that they would prioritize seeding over just being able to – I mean, I do think it's important towards the end that they have a solidified rotation given that, you know, what I said about their underbaked chemistry earlier. But I don't think there's going to be a major push for them to try to toy with matchups, which is going to be kind of hard anyways, because you don't know how any of the other teams are going to approach things or where they're at. But I would guess that the Heat would probably rather play the Pacers. I'm just spitballing here, but I'm guessing they would. So from their standpoint, given that they already own the tiebreaker, I would be kind of interested since these games are kind of towards the back end, would there be any, you know, wanting to sit some guys so that they could be in a matchup with the Pacers if it was close between Indiana and Philly? I mean, in your estimation, do you think the Heat would rather play the Pacers than the Sixers?
No, actually, I think.
Oh, you don't.
I think, yeah, strangely enough, they're this team is just, it sounds almost like a slogan or something like that, or a type of branding that they've pushed very effectively. But they really like the challenge of facing the tougher teams. They'd rather go through it the hard way than the easy way. I don't know. It seems ridiculous to kind of consider it that way, but that is just how this team mentality works. They kind of talk about it very frequently, and they bring in players that buy into that belief system very easily. And so that's part of why this team has achieved the kind of success it has, is that the people on this team, you know, you kind of consider the fact that, you know, this is a very new team. Obviously Jimmy, but all the guys that they've brought in this past season, they weren't poised to be as successful as they are, but they just they fit very, very well together. And there's just a great sense of continuity from the members of this team. And I think they would rather go through the Sixers and beat Joel Embiid and go through Ben Simmons and have all the drama that series would entail, rather than taking a quote unquote easier path than going through Indiana. So that's just a whole story there. It's kind of hard to predict exactly where this team is coming from, because they haven't been so consistently good either. Like they started off really, really unexpectedly hot, and then kind of tailed off right before the hiatus began in mid-March. And you know, they made changes to the roster at the trade deadline. Indiana stayed pat at the trade deadline, right? I don't think they made any significant changes.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, it's interesting. Where do you feel? I'm curious now that I have you on the phone here. Where do you feel about the whole restart situation? I did want to ask you about that. Do you feel it's a bad decision, or are you happy to see basketball being played again in a few short weeks?
I mean, the whole thing makes me nervous. I just hope that everybody gets out of it healthy and none of it goes sideways. But I mean, it was ultimately the players' decisions, and I was glad that they at least had the chance to say that, you know, if they didn't want to play for whatever reason that might have been, that they didn't have to, and that hopefully they went into it informed, fully knowing what they were getting themselves into to make that choice. But, I mean, with the way the cases are spiking in Florida and, you know, reading some of the stuff about the ethics of having testing when people are having to wait for tests as long as they are, I mean, it definitely creates a bit of a backdrop that makes you feel a little bit less good about watching it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, last point here. I did want to ask you about this before I let you go. Recently, I guess editors over across SB Nation at every team site had to pick a Disney character add to their team, and you picked Trusty from Lady and the Tramp. That was a dark horse selection there. Here's the explanation that you provide. I know it was sort of a draft, right? You had the 22 teams in the bubble having to add a Disney character to their roster. So here's your explanation. Though he may be getting up there in years and doesn't boast superhuman strength like Hercules, the Deadeye shooting of Robin Hood, or Maui's thick frame, Trusty arguably best reflects the three admittedly somewhat corny tenets of Indiana's culture: toughness, togetherness, and wait for it, trust. I mean, come on, it's right there in his name. Yeah. Oh, Caitlin. Trusty, huh? That's going deep in the reserves too.
I had to go to a deep cut. It was a randomized draft order, and whenever this was assigned, we got told, you know, we're going to be doing this Disney draft. I told our site manager, I was like, you know, I can do that one. I know quite a bit about Disney characters. I think I can handle this. I did not know at the time that I would be picking 22nd. So like, I had all these characters. Those were the three I'd picked. I was like, oh, Robin Hood would make some sense. He's a great shooter. He can stand on stilts. He can play up a position. I was like, Maui is a shape shifting defender, and even says he's unstoppable on the break. Like, I had all these characters picked, and then one by one, they're just, you know, coming off the board. And I was like, I'm going to have to go with a deep cut. I'm going to have to pick a random character. And I was thinking about the Pacers 3T culture, and then I knew that they needed somebody at the point of the attack to, you know, kind of spell Malcolm Brogdon from having to – that's been a weak point for him this year. So I'm like, you know, who would be better to be a lock and trail or rear-view pursuit defender than a bloodhound who can stay on the scent? So Trusty it was. But, yes, there was a lot of questions about that. There was another person within the SB Nation Network who sent me a message before that became a official and was like, who is Trusty?
you gave this a lot of thought. I could tell you had that explanation right there at the hip. You exactly knew what you were selecting there, and that's pretty interesting. Was there any other character that Trusty was selected over that maybe could be a draft day steal later on if you could acquire him as a second round pick or something like that?
Well, somebody did bring up in the aftermath, I'm like, I cannot believe that none of us thought of this character. They're like, why did no one pick Tigger? Like, that is a very good question, because they're like, he can catch.
He's got hops. Yeah,
he can catch any lob. He's a singular athlete. There's no one like him. So I was like, that was a good one. Tigger was a bit of an oversight, but wow. I was surprised that nobody picked him. You have to give shouts to the Rockets blog that picked Jiminy Cricket as well. I'm like, an amazing pick to have a conscious in the bubble.
Wow, that is, and of course, then Bruno Caboclo goes and immediately eradicates that, because he goes ahead and steps outside of the bubble and tests positive for.
And apparently, there's already been calls on the snitching tip line. So.
Oh yeah. It's we're gonna see how this experiment plays out, but I'm glad you were able to at least explain in more detail the trustee selection there. It doesn't sound as bad now that you've gotten a much more thorough explanation there. So. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk Pacers talk. Maybe we'll do this again later on once the games are actually played, and hopefully you and your family are doing well and staying safe.
Yeah, same to you. Thanks for having me on, and thanks for listening, Heat fans.
You got it. Make sure to check out Caitlin. Do you want to tell them where they can follow you at on Twitter?
I'm sure. Yeah, my handle is very bad, but if you can remember, it is @C2_Cooper, and then all my writing, if you ever want to read anything, is always at IndyCornrows.com at SB Nation.
Well, she's a fantastic writer again, so make sure you do follow her and keep track of all the latest goings on with the Pacers, and she's the one to talk to and follow, so absolutely make sure you do that. Be sure to subscribe and follow this podcast right now on your favorite podcast app. You'll get the latest episode of Locked on Heat as soon as it's out. I'm David Ramil signing off, and thanking you as always for your support.